to find my ways. Follow me, climb the stairs. Love for sale.
Listening to WHFR Dearborn 89.3 Making Waves, and now going out with the East Side Brigade Band and Vinewood Rumble.
Thank you. This is WHFR Dearborn. This is live broadcast now on Friday, January the 11th, 2008. Another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and views. Good morning and welcome. Good morning. It is, after 17 years, it is the afternoon. I know everybody who listens to the show regularly and has switched their listening times finds it quite entertaining for me to know not what time of day it is. I know it's afternoon. It's shortly after 1 o'clock in the afternoon now, and we are here at WHFR-FM live. And public affairs, that's local news and views for us, very local, although sometimes things that are happening right here in Dearborn and the surrounding area do happen to be the same as things that are important somewhere else in the world, maybe even everywhere else in the world. No man or woman is an island. Remember that. I think that was a poem by John Donne from an English literature background. In any event, let's take a look at the top stories of the day. We always take a look at the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald for the last week. If I didn't already mention, my name is Jay Koronek, and I'm the station advisor here, too, at WHFR-FM. The buck stops here. And if you do have any questions or comments for me, my email address is jkorinek. My first name is Jay, and that's just the letter J then, and then korinek at hfcc.edu. The opinions expressed on this show, too, are only mine and other co-hosts or guests, not necessarily anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. I am joined in the studio today by our WHFR news director, and that's Susan Morrell. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, yes.
Hang on, we'll get you on. There you are.
I almost said good morning, but it is not morning. It's the PM show.
That's right.
Don't
follow my lead on that one. Okay, so you have some comments, friend, some stories about the Michigan's presidential primary, which is coming up next Tuesday, which is being covered by a lot of folks, but we'll put a new spin on that, and we'll treat that later. Any other big stories that you'd like to bring up? They're going to be closing our cafeteria in a moment, folks, so she's going to slide away for a couple minutes and let me say whatever I want to, and she won't hear it, and then she'll be back. But what stories did you want to bring up later?
Well, I know we have the presidential primary, so I'm kind of focused on that, and I think that's really the big news of the moment for Michigan, and of course the economy is always an issue. And
well, yes, yes, I had to make change to get my sandwich too. I know change. Everybody's for change.
Yeah.
Pocket change would be a good start, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Pocket change. Okay, that's my joke there. So we'll have you back in just a few moments, and we'll bring up the topic of Michigan's presidential primary and maybe some alternative views on that you might not have heard before. First off, I would want to just say and just to remind people that I'm very respectful that the Writers Guild of America are on strike, okay? And since we kind of do a comedy show, okay, news writers is a different union, but because I do some jokes and sometimes people laugh, at least I'm told that they do who are listening to the show, I want you to know that all those jokes are unscripted. I am not I have no one writing them for me, and you probably can figure that out, and it is completely ad lib here. And so, although I did grow a beard right before the writer's strike, and just like David Letterman and Conan O'Brien did, to be in sympathy. So this is radio. I just want you to know I'm wearing my beard. Well, of course, I almost always have a beard anyway, but I didn't for a few weeks, a few months before the writer's strike, and so now I'm in the excuse is I'm in sympathy with the writer's strike, and I'm all for the dramatic writers of radio and TV and film having money, having payments for their work that is distributed digitally over the Internet. In fact, NBC admitted that programming of theirs that goes over the Internet, they're making $1 billion of profit. Sticks in my throat. Oops, Susan wants to say something. Go ahead.
Why can't they give the writers a cut? What's the problem?
You know, they've already set the precedent. They're giving the writers a small percentage of profits from, like, CD sales and DVD sales and video cassette sales. And so they've already set the principle. This is just a different medium of distribution, a different manner of distribution. And they should, of course, you can always dispute the amount, the percentage, which is fair. But they've already set the principle. They've already gone along with that for more than a dozen years. And so the large production studios for film and television shows are just, they're just trying to exercise their power and trying to keep their profits higher than really. They've already set the principle, and this boggles the mind, and many commentators have pointed this out, is that they should settle. I noticed that today the Weinstein Company, an independent film production company that Harvey Weinstein, who formerly was with Disney and started the production company called Miramax, which is still a Disney company now, but he left in dispute with Disney, ABC Disney, and has got his own company. So just like David Letterman has settled individually, there's a lot of the smaller company, because Letterman controls his own little company, they have their own little tentative agreement. If anyone cares, I think you should be totally in support of the Writers Guild of America strike. These people, without the scripts, they got nothing.
Well, I have to admit, the holiday season this year for Christmas shows was terrible. There weren't any holiday shows like there normally are, and it was a pretty dismal holiday season on television.
Well, it still is, and some shows that are coming back with new episodes, they finished a few scripts in advance of the strike. They hadn't made the shows yet, but they had finished the scripts for the various dramatic shows in advance real fast at the last minute before the strike, and they finished it. So there's still a few new episodes that will start up later this month for your favorite TV drama and comedy series, but they don't have many more after that. Also, all feature film production of new scripts in Hollywood has stopped, with the exception of, as I said, the Weinstein Company, Harvey Weinstein's company formerly. He was with Miramax. He had started Miramax. They are going to go and start, be able to start feature production now. They just settled today. But we're in sympathy with them. But just in case you wondered, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central with their shows, The Daily Show, which Jon Stewart is now calling A Daily Show, and Stephen Colbert's show, they are just ad-libbing their own ideas. Now, Jay Leno claims with NBC, even though Writers Guild are disputing that, he claims he's writing his own material.
Yeah, and it's not that good either.
Well, but that would be allowed. If you write your own material, it's not like you need to pay someone else to write it for you. All the Writers Guild says, hey, you're a member of the Writers Guild, and you can't even write for yourself. But he says, no, I think it's legal for me to write for myself. I just can't pay someone in the Guild to write for me. And of course, it is nice, of course, why not, that he, out of his own salary, which is tens of millions of dollars a year, he continues to pay all the people on his staff, I guess even the writers on strike, their regular salaries or the money that they normally would get, because he is in sympathy with them. And of course, with that much money per year, why not help them in their righteous,
well, he wants them
righteous
to,
struggle.
He wants them to come back. He doesn't want to lose them because...
Right. He doesn't want the show to end, to go out of production either. It's bad for the ratings.
You know, he did have really good jokes before they went on strike.
Well, yeah. And I have to give credit to, the ad-libbing that Jon Stewart... basically, Jon Stewart and Colbert, what they're doing is they are watching other news channels. Since they always commented on other news stories, they're watching news channels, and they are taking care of they're indicating what things they want to make spontaneous comments about, and then they're getting the videotape recorded by other production people, and they play those excerpts and then make fun of it on their show, but it's not scripted as
such. And this is whose show?
This is both Jon Stewart's The Daily Show, which is on Comedy Central each Monday through Thursday nights at 11. And, yeah, so that's the way it goes.
Well, how has the show improved under these circumstances? Is it any better or worse?
Well, it's a little slower pace because you can see that Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have to make up. They have to make up their stuff as they go along. Let me play some public service announcements here. We're going to take just a little break on WHFR Journal, and we'll be right back with you right after. Let's see what's important today. Here's a good one. Ask doctors questions. Yeah, I've always wanted to do that. Okay, we'll be right back with you here on the new WHFR Journal. More local news and views after this announcement.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
Okay, we're back here at the new WHFR Journal. The maintenance crew here at the college, chief engineer just notified me that there's going to be a fire drill in a few seconds. And so what that means is you're going to have a beep in the background, but don't evacuate. It is just a test. This is only a test. And they say they're going to turn it off right after the first buzzer, and they seem to always do it. They used to always do it at between 10 and 11 when this show was on live Friday mornings.
But now they changed. They heard you were on at 1 o'clock.
Right. Yeah. Now that they heard we're on at 1 o'clock, maybe they thought they were going to avoid us by doing it at 1 o'clock.
But anyway, they like to interrupt your show. I guess that's the point, right?
I'm afraid they think we're very special. Yes. Yes. I hear you very loudly.
So. Oh, you do? Okay. Because I can't hear. I'm not hearing anything through the headphones here.
Your headphones broke. Okay. You go get your sandwich, Susan.
No. I think I'll just stay.
Well, in that case, all right. She's going to stay. Do you want to talk about the primary then?
Sure. There's plenty to talk about. I'm sure you have an ample amount of material, as do I.
Okay, again, we're going to try to fill our listeners in on things that maybe they haven't heard too much or things to keep in mind about next Tuesday. So, go.
Okay, there was an op-ed article in the New York Times on January 8th. That was the fire alarm.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is by Gloria Steinem. And she says, "Women are never front runners." And so she gives a description of a woman who is symbolic of Barack Obama. And in other words, he was a lawyer, he says it's a woman, and she was a lawyer, she was a community organizer, she married a corporate liar, not a liar, that was a Freudian slip. And the mother of two little girls. She is the daughter of a white American mother and a black African father, and she is considered to be black in this country. She has served as a state legislator for 8 years and became an inspirational voice for national unity. And her question is this, be honest, do you think this is the biography of someone who could be elected to the United States Senate? And the second question is, after less than one term, do you believe that this person could be also a viable candidate to head the most powerful nation on earth?
Mm-hmm.
And she says that the answer to that, if it was a woman, would be no. No one would vote for a woman who had these qualifications for president. And she says gender is probably the most restricting force in American life. And she says this country is way down the list of countries electing women. It polarizes gender roles more than the average democracy. And she points out a number of issues that black men were given the vote half a century before women of any race were allowed to vote. And that black men have generally ascended to positions of power in the United States, from military to boardroom, before any women. And so she's setting the stage, and she's saying that the black male has much more opportunity in America in terms of a career in politics or business or whatever. And she says, her question is this: why is the sex barrier not taken as seriously as the racial one? And I agree with that, because the women's movement has, in my view, died and gone to heaven or something. I don't know what.
I don't think it's gone to heaven. It's in limbo, I think.
It's in limbo.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what she's complaining about. She says sexism is still confused with nature. And she says that anything that affects males in our society is seen as more serious than anything that affects only females. And I think that is true. Probably males don't recognize that. They say, well, it's, you know, it's a woman, it's a female complaint, you know, we don't want to hear about it. And
but who would know better the things that matter to females than females?
Well, this is true. This is true. And that most children are still raised mostly by women, and men tend to feel they are regressing to childhood when dealing with a powerful woman. And so they become uncomfortable. They don't like it. And then she says there is still no right way for a woman in public power without being considered a you-know-what. And we know what that word is. We cannot say that word here on WHFR. No bad words are permitted.
Well, I think we actually could say it. FCC doesn't have guidelines against it, but it's not nice.
It's not nice.
We actually have a very basic principle here, is we don't say anything that's not nice about anybody, even if they deserve it.
Well, that's true.
Of course, you know, we have disparaged doubted the veracity of quite a few people here on this show, but none. I don't think that's an issue of nicety or not. I think it's an issue of just fairness and truth. You're searching for the truth, you do have to try to speak the truth as best you know it, qualify it as is appropriate. But sometimes that's true, and I don't doubt that. It's kind of interesting, although I don't believe it, is that when Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire in that diner, I think it was last Monday, did have she didn't really cry, but she had a little quiver in her voice, as if she was almost going to cry.
And she had a tear in her eye.
I never saw the close-up of the tear, but, you know, I
think there was a tear.
That's the way they describe it, is a tear in her eye. Because
I could see it. I could see it.
She did sound like she was getting emotional and personal, and she wasn't making a speech. It was a diner, for Pete's sake, and she was trying to say it's tough campaigning. You know, it's tough for anyone, and it's really especially when other people say untrue and hurtful things about you a lot, and it's been quite a grind for all these candidates. Amazing that anybody has survived such scrutiny and such strenuous daily commitments, speeches and reporters everywhere constantly. I don't think an average person or any person should really be forced to go in through that sort of ordeal, but Hillary and Barack Obama and others have done pretty good, I think. I mean, it's people understand what it's all about, and you have to sort of grin and bear it to get through this, and perhaps that did help her in getting more votes than Barack on Tuesday. I don't want to just say these things because people have heard them before, one kind of spin or another on CNN, Fox News, and so on. It's the usual idea. I don't believe that one tearing up moment helped her get more votes. I think she certainly has the experience the connections, the money. Certainly she's well known after decades of public service, and I think people voted for her because they wanted to vote for her, not because that she almost teared up. Would that soften a woman candidate so she wouldn't be called the B word? Her image? Yes, it would. And therefore, it could have been calculated, it could have been suggested, but I think it's bound to happen that you're going to tear up at moments on this, in this kind of campaigning. Gloria Steinem's opinion, you saw it...
New York Times. New York this Times. Is from the New York Times.
Remember, Gloria, folks, you can go to newyorktimes.com and just type in Gloria Steinem, Steinman, and the column will pop up if you wanted to read it for yourself.
But at any rate, so Gloria is supporting Senator Clinton because of her experience, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's saying she has a lot more experience than Obama, she's worried that he is seen as a unifying force by his race, and Clinton is seen as a divisive force by her sex. And that Clinton is accused of playing the gender card, while he is seen as unifying by citing civil rights confrontations. Okay. So those are the issues, and I think those are good points.
Absolutely. Let me go back to a couple of other stories I have here, and I get your comments on them, too. In this week's Press and Guide, Dearborn Press and Guide from Wednesday, January 9th, the story on the front page, Sean Delaney, says that the vote turnout for next Tuesday's presidential primaries here in Michigan is expected to be only 25%. Now, that's always a terribly low number in my estimation. If you're registered to vote, you should vote. You should feel it's your responsibility. I have mentioned, and it's in the Times Herald, interestingly, they found an editorial from one of their allied papers here, the Livingston County Daily Press and Argus, in Howell, Michigan, beautiful Howell, Michigan, whether it's allied with them or not, they happen to find this and they use it. And basically that editorial says Michigan's presidential primary is deeply flawed in terms of how it, well, number one, only favors Dems and Republicans, but the Democratic side has only got Hillary's name on the ballot, no one else's, and you could vote for uncommitted. And I wanted to at least spin off on that, because maybe some Democrats will say, you know, well, it's only Hillary's name there. I'm not for her, but I'm not even going to vote because my preference for the Democratic side is someone else. And here's a story from New York Times today. Nick Bunkley came up this one about the Michigan primary. It says, rarely do people work so hard to drum up votes for no one in particular, because Michigan's January 15th primary, that's next week Tuesday, folks, next Tuesday. Okay, today is the 11th, 4 days away. Because Michigan's January 15th primary violates Democratic National Committee rules, coming too early in the year, Senator Barack Obama and John Edwards withdrew from the state's race, leaving Hillary Rodham Clinton's name as the party's only major candidate on the ballot.
Well, that's not true. Dennis Kucinich was on there.
You know, I heard that, too, from some other source. This word went around, and in fact, even Frank Bewick apologized because he apparently passed along the same statement, or I passed along his statement, that it was only Hillary's name. I do believe... because, see, Kucinich is not referred to as a major party candidate.
Well, he's
a major candidate.
No, I know, but should be, and he's been campaigning.
Of course he is. He's been campaigning all over the states. Whether or not he got 1% or 2% of votes elsewhere doesn't matter. In fact, I wonder if Joe Biden and Senator Dodd's names are also on the Michigan ballot. They're not considered, they're Democrats, but they're not considered major candidates. So their names may be there, too.
I don't think they are, but I'm not positive.
Okay. But the other two major or candidates that the press claims are major, and I don't see candidates as major or minor. If you're a legitimate candidate, you're running, your name's going to be on the ballot, you're all equal, and you should be all equal in media attention. Let's get the word out about all of them equally. It doesn't happen, folks. The commercial media doesn't do it that way, and shame on them, and shame for you for believing them, that there are such things as major candidates and other people that shouldn't be running. Last night, just as an aside, I saw the Republican debate that went on in South Carolina. I don't know whatever it was, CNN, Fox. It was Fox because they had Fox commentators asking questions. One of the Fox commentators was extremely insulting, trying to bait, get a rise out of Ron Paul, Representative Ron Paul, running for president, formerly ran as a libertarian, is a Republican, though he's, as he described himself last night, he's probably the most conservative. If you like conservative Republicans, he says he's the most conservative. But this man said, basically, and I can't, if I paraphrase, I'll make it worse, but he basically said, why are you running? Well, nobody cares about you. We haven't gotten any votes. Well, and of course that's a mistake. In one contest, he got more votes than Giuliani. In the other one, he tied Fred Thompson. So, you know, if you consider Thompson a major player, which some people still do, Thompson doesn't have the votes, but neither does Paul. Okay, but no reason to insult him. Like, why are you here? I mean, why are you even on this stage? Well, because he's going to be on the ballot, because he has a point of view, because he deserves an equal chance. And they never give it to him or these other so-called minor candidates like Kucinich and so on. Who are the reporters to say what's important and what isn't? Let the voters decide. Let the voters decide once they have equal knowledge about all the candidates. Well, okay. So this is what's been happening among, I want to continue the story from the New York Times today, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Obama's supporters in Michigan, their campaign supporters, are going around urging voters to vote uncommitted to help them gain momentum and to deal a setback to Mrs. Clinton. So, for example, imagine in the Democratic primary Monday, if Hillary Clinton gets only 10 or 20% of the votes cast, and all the rest are cast as uncommitteds, that makes her look bad. See
well,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I just don't like the way they're doing it, the way it's been organized. I think every candidate should be on there.
Some people are familiar with John Conyers Jr., our local representative, even from the east part of Dearborn, Detroit, 16th District. Representative Conyers and his wife, Monica Conyers, who's a Detroit City Councilwoman right now, they support Mr. Obama. They began running radio commercials on Wednesday telling people to vote uncommitted. And several groups, Michiganders for Obama, Michigan for Edwards, and the newly formed Detroiters for Uncommitted Voters, have been campaigning door-to-door on the phone and at rallies, spreading the uncommitted message.
Well, do you think that's a good idea,
well,
to vote uncommitted?
They've got a point. I would rather vote for a person who's got a real name on the ballot.
What is the point of having an election if you're not going to vote for a
Well,
person?
Again, they don't want Hillary to say, well, Of everyone that voted in Michigan, my name was the only major name there. I got 90%. So the Democrats in Michigan really love me. Well, I agree. Just because you're Democrat, you go to the primary. If you're not for Hillary Clinton, no, you should
well,
vote.
I don't see
you
how.
Should vote for uncommitted. That's the or Kucinich if his name is there, or Biden or Dodd if their names are there, if you prefer them. But it is true that a vote for uncommitted would be a vote against Hillary, certainly.
Right, but how is this going to be a legitimate election? How are we going to
finalize? Not on the Democratic side. No,
it's not for real.
Yes. Right. And get this, under Michigan election law, if at least 15% of votes in any district or statewide are for uncommitted, the corresponding percentage of delegates may back any candidate. Because neither Mr. Obama or Mr. Edwards registered as write-in candidates, any write-in votes for them will be thrown out. And by the way, that is a point. No, even though you might feel tempted and you might be able to do it, all write-in votes. This is the way the Dems and the Republicans set up this election on Tuesday. All write-in votes will not be counted. That's part of the editorial in the Times Herald this week, too, about our primary being deeply flawed. How undemocratic is that?
It's deeply flawed.
We know that any write-ins would usually not have a chance to win, although some write-in candidates have for local Congress, Congress Council, members, and so on. That it has happened in Michigan that a write-in will win. However, it should always be our democratic right to be able to do that and have that counted. And it can't be on Tuesday. So don't even try, folks.
So who's in charge of all these rules? The Democrats?
It's the Democrat and Republican parties in our legislature, our elected representatives, Dems and Republicans, that together got together and passed the guidelines and the rules and even the funding, $17 million, remember, folks, for this primary coming up Tuesday in which the Democratic Party has said, we're not even going to pay attention to who gets elected because you're not following our rules.
Well, $17 million is a lot of money, Jane.
Right. That's the other issue. We're so in desperate need of money for our state government and keep the prisons running and so on, all of the social programs. It's the worst tragedy in the world, and shame on all of our elected representatives that think it's a good thing for Michigan. We get attention from the national media. They're going to look at us. Well,
how will Michigan determine a Democratic winner, a legitimate winner of their primary? I don't understand what is going to be the outcome here.
They'll let the media interpret it for them.
No, but I mean, they're going to other states, they're winning primaries, and they're given so many delegates by the winner.
Right.
So how is that going to work out?
Well, at this point, as I've said before, on the Democratic side, the delegates will not be the delegates will not be committed for anyone because right now the Democratic National Party has said we're not going to respect that election at all.
Well, then what are we going to do? We're going to have another one later?
If the present situation continues, then maybe the Democratic National Party will re-decide. They can always re-decide.
Well, otherwise Michigan's out of the race.
We will have no delegates voting for anybody at the Democratic National Convention. That's the present situation.
Oh, that is terrible.
Right. But they probably won't. The National Democratic Party won't let that happen. They'll do something. They'll make some accommodation or they'll say, okay, we'll start all over. And the people attending the convention, representing the state of Michigan Democratic Party, will let you decide there. You know,
well,
how
that's not fair.
Yeah,
but it won't be fair to the voters.
It won't be tied to any public vote.
Voters of Michigan.
But right now, we can't vote for anybody. Any Democrats within the party can't vote for anybody to be the nominee. There's no way to do that right now, according to the guidelines that the National Party has said. And it's kind of a punishment thing, and maybe they'll back off. So we'll see.
Is not my idea of a fair election.
No, but I think as a good citizen, I do recommend Democrats and Republicans or anyone. You don't have to, you can only vote one way or the other. But if you're an independent and you want to try to sort out who the best candidate would be on one side or the other, you go in and vote whatever the best approach is on Tuesday. Just go in and do the best you can. The $17 million has already been spent. You can't take it back. I guess you could sort of protest the whole thing by not going and voting at all. But I'm not sure our politicians will learn anything from that. So I'd say if there is an election, go vote to the best of your ability to whatever decisions you make on that. But if your candidates aren't there, don't try to do a write-in because the write-in won't help. They won't count it even. Shame on those Dems and Republicans. Shame on our state legislature. But enough people have said that. We've got so many editorials that blame our legislature for so many ills and such a mess over the last 3-4 years. Don't blame Granholm by herself. Okay, yeah, she loved the idea of this primary. She loved it. And I've been against it from the beginning because of the cost. But, you know, please do the best you can with and go vote.
Can I talk a little bit about Dennis Kucinich?
You're right. And I have two other articles, one about Bill Richardson and Rudy Giuliani, too. Go ahead.
Okay, because Dennis Kucinich has a wonderful website, Dennis for President, Dennis, the number 4, and president.com. And he has a whole plan. He is totally against the war in Iraq. He voted against funding its continuation. He believes we need diplomacy as a path to strong international leadership. Mm-hmm. And he wants to develop a new policy of strength through peace. And that is what we believe here on WHFR, the new WHFR journal. And he wants to promote a healthy nation with a single universal plan, single-payer, not-for-profit healthcare system, which I think we're in favor of here. He wants go ahead.
Yeah, let me clarify that that's quite important. Dennis Kucinich is the only candidate running Dems or Republican side, only candidate, you know, officially running Dems and Republicans, that is for that kind of pure single-payer national health care plan. Okay, that's the only situation. John Edwards is close, but not quite suggesting the same thing. Barack Obama wants some extension of Medicare, as does Hillary, some massive extension, but he wants to sit down and negotiate with the doctors and the drug companies on how to do that. Well, you don't negotiate with the enemy, according to George Bush anyway. That's probably doomed to failure in terms of change.
That sounds like a long, painful process.
Change. Now, you and I are often, I think we state here, or people can tell, that we would like this country to consider a single-payer national health care plan, since it does work in other countries pretty well, and it's certainly much, much, much better. If we had one of their plans, or a modification of the Canadian plan, the French plan, the German plan, the English plans, if we found the best of those plans, it would, and could put it in place, you know, it would be better than what we have now. Now, can we improve what we have now? Sure. Ron Paul wants to go the total of the other direction. Get everything out of the federal government plan, and that would be interesting to try to do that too, to change things around to a total private non-government interference situation. Maybe both the extremes won't work, but you're correct to point out, if people are for the pure positive, best form of a single-payer national health care, free drugs, free medical care for everybody, that is free prescription drugs for a medical problem for everybody, then Kucinich is the candidate that's closest to that.
And he also supports an end to poverty. He wants to make it a national priority to fight poverty worldwide, and he says that this can be done through peace, tolerance, and eradicating the root causes of global poverty. He has a plan for all this, and he wants to save capitalism. He wants to end NAFTA, our participation in NAFTA and the WTO, that's the World Trade Organization. Mm-hmm. And he wants to replace it with a plan of ethics and accountability and fairness in global trade and big business. Now, that sounds good to me.
Well, yeah, a lot of the generalizations, you know, end poverty and health care for everybody.
But
good,
he gets specific.
Good education for everyone.
He gets specific. He has specifics on the website.
Stop wasting our money on the war on terrorism that doesn't work, that doesn't prove effective, you know. I think everybody's in favor of all those things in general. Who has the best plan and who can make it happen? You know, our system, it's not the president can't have their way. They have to be a good leader and get the help of the people in the Congress and the American people. They have to do a campaign after the campaign is over and they get elected in order to get their bills passed. And that's always the ultimate question. They got a good plan. They're a good person. Do they have the leadership and mediation skills to pull together everybody to actually make it happen? And sometimes you don't know until, you know, you get the people in there and you get the best plan. So you got to take your chances on them. Let me do my one or two stories here. First of all, we lost Bill Richardson officially from the campaign. He said he can't afford it and he doesn't get enough votes or attention from the media. But this is how nice this guy is. So some people say, I want to vote for the nicest person.
Oh, he is a nice guy. I've seen him talking. Okay. He's great.
Get this. He paid tribute when he said on Thursday, yesterday, that he was bowing out. He played tribute to two former candidates, also former candidates, saying of Senator Joseph Biden that his passion and intellect are remarkable, and called Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut the epitome of selfless dedication, public service, and Democratic Party. And then he went on to say that John Edwards, quote, is a singular voice for the most downtrodden and forgotten among us, unquote. He said this about Obama. He said he, quote, represents a bright light of hope and optimism in a time of great national unease, and is, quote, grounded in thoughtful wisdom beyond his years. And for Hillary Clinton, he said, her poise in the face of adversity is matched only by her lifetime of achievement and deep understanding of what we face. And then Kucinich, who we just mentioned, he described as, quote, a man of great decency and dedication who will faithfully soldier on, no matter how great the odds. And Mike Gravel, who was, I think, a former senator from Alaska. I didn't remember this about Senator Gravel. He put the Pentagon Papers in the public record. In other words, he read the stolen documents. Daniel Ellsberg stole them from the Pentagon to prove that the Pentagon and the president, Lyndon Johnson, lied to us about Vietnam and the Tonkin Bay attack just to get that war built up, to give an excuse to put more money into that also mistaken and inappropriate war.
That sounds very right. familiar, doesn't
but,
so, it?
But Gravel was brave enough to stand up with stolen Pentagon documents and read them out loud and put them in the congressional record just in case a newspaper would be barred from publishing them under some sort of Secrets Act, you know, which they did try to prevent. The government then, Nixon, tried to prevent it from being published, but the Supreme Court of the United States said, okay, it was secret, but the government, you guys have lied to the public. You lied to them. You sent military men to die for a lie, and it's okay to reveal such facts, even if they're so-called secrets, if the government has been lying to the public. And that I love that ruling. The Supreme Court of the U.S. was totally right. But
well,
Gravel,
we should have the same ruling on Iraq.
But Gravel, who knows? I mean, he was reading it out loud in Congress. It was being recorded. They could have sent soldiers in and grabbed him and arrested him, and you know, but you know, Nixon wasn't brave enough for that or stupid enough even at that point. So Gravel, a very brave one, and he said his brave leadership during the national turmoil of Vietnam. That was the nice compliment that Bill Richardson made. Richardson was dressed in a blazer and jeans and vowing to get back to being governor of New Mexico. He had a final plea that everyone play nicely and, quote, not resort to personal attacks.
Well, that's wishful thinking.
Yeah. He did not endorse any other candidate. He urged voters to, quote, make your own independent choice, which means think for yourself, folks. That's what my interpretation is. Don't let any other pundit, including Susan Morrell or myself here, make up your mind for you. You can listen. We hope you do. Get very upset if you're not listening. I miss you. I will. But read the papers. Read books if you get a chance. Listen to television pundits. But, you know, make up your own mind and do your civic duty. Last but not least on this, if Susan Morrell will allow me, the New York Times has a great function. They put together a team of experts, and they record television commercials and radio commercials from different candidates, and they actually recorded a television commercial by Rudolph Giuliani, and I bring up his name because Frank Bewick in this week's column said, well, you know, I kind of like Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani in the Republican primary, just in case you wanted to know where, you know, Frank Bewick stood. He said, I kind of like those two guys, either one. He's not saying which one he votes for. He's not recommending you vote that way, but he's saying he likes Mitt Romney and Rudolph Giuliani in the Republican primary. Probably vote, therefore, for one or the other of them himself. But this is what Giuliani was running in a TV spot on Thursday in Florida, where he's heavily competing, urging voters not to discount him based on news media coverage of his losses in Iowa and New Hampshire. The script, first of all, and this is the New York Times analysis, but it's really done professionally, as a telecom professor would do, like myself, too. In terms of the words, an announcer says, with pundits and politicals handicapping the campaign like the Super Bowl, it's easy to lose sight of what's at stake, an economy in peril, a country at war, a future uncertain. The media loves process. Talking heads love chatter, but Florida has a chance to turn down the noise and show the world that leadership is what really matters. And then Mr. Giuliani's voice comes on saying, I'm Rudy Giuliani, and I approve this message. So, good point there, though, Rudy, right? In other words, people should decide for themselves, not what the people on the media say. Now, what about accuracy or analysis in terms of this? Remember, Rudy Giuliani was a sixth-place finish in Iowa behind Representative Ron Paul of Texas and a fourth-place finisher in New Hampshire, only narrowly ahead of Mr. Paul. In fact, he and Mr. Paul, I think, pretty equal in New Hampshire vote. Mr. Giuliani has to persuade the voters of Florida not to count him out as a loser as he nearly disappears from news coverage of the race. Now, that's the fault of the media, not his. He's trying to campaign to the extent of the money he has in the places that he thinks he's going to do the best, which is focusing on the winners in Iowa and New Hampshire and the coming contest in Michigan and South Carolina, where Mr. Giuliani is not making a major effort. Okay, he focuses on the two issues, security and fiscal matters, that have been at the core of his campaign. But the advertisement seems to go further than Mr. Giuliani does on the stump when it describes an economy, the economy as being, quote-unquote, in peril, which may signal that he is going to try to tap into the growing economic anxiety of many voters. Certainly could do that here in Michigan.
Oh, yes.
If he had the money to campaign, which he doesn't. I've been approached as part of the show. We've received emails and voicemail. I got a telephone call yesterday from a Senator McCain campaign worker. At my house in Dearborn, I've gotten three postcard mailings, beautiful color, for Senator McCain, and one for Mitt Romney. Susan, you live in Dearborn Heights?
Yes.
Have you gotten any mailings?
No, because the last time they called me, the Democrats, I was very angry, kind of told them what I thought, and I said, don't call me anymore, I'm an independent.
Yeah, and the reason, well, the reason I get these, not because I'm Republican, but because I do have membership in a whole number of political parties so that I get all this information automatically. So everybody thinks I'm a supporter of them, you know.
Right.
But here at WHFR, they know we do this show, and they do provide this information. That's why they called me yesterday. But not Mitt Romney's people, but John McCain's people. And although it's interesting, I looked for, they said, well, we sent you email, and he's going to be in town for media conferences, press conferences tomorrow, Saturday. I don't have it yet, so I do apologize to the John McCain people. I gave them yesterday the email addresses for WHFR and for me personally. I haven't seen anything yet, so maybe they're not totally organized. But it's interesting, those three color large-size postcards that came for John McCain to my house over the last 3-4 days, they had to have put them in the mail before New Hampshire. They had to print them a month ago.
Sure.
So the McCain people have been very active in Michigan, but especially now, I guess they're encouraged since he did the best of the Republicans in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is not Michigan. New Hampshire is not New Mexico or California, and so on. And every place is different. So we'll have to wait and see whether or not the New Hampshire bump or extra push for McCain's visibility in the media anyway, which you shouldn't believe, will affect Michigan voters on Tuesday. So I do think the Republican primary is something to look at. It is legitimate, what we were saying about the Democratic representation of voters. The delegates for these people will be compelled to vote for, in the proper percentage, the votes cast on Tuesday in the Republican primary at the Republican National Convention. So it will be fairly fair and even. Unfortunately, though, of course, an independent or a Democrat can go in and say, I want to vote Republican today, and then vote for who they perceive to be, let's say, the worst candidate or the most easily beaten candidate in the Republican slate there. So we hope that doesn't happen. That's negative campaigning, but it could. And so that will skew the vote a little bit on Tuesday if Democrats say, I think I'm going to cause trouble for the Republicans and I'm going to, you know, get the ballot as if I was a Republican and vote there.
Well, anybody could do that. They could
anybody,
do that on the Democratic side, too.
It happened in the caucuses in Iowa, too. We know that a lot of people who formerly were not registered as a Democrat or a Republican showed up and just they went to that first meeting, they paid the money, the dues, to be a Democrat or Republican, and then they got a chance to vote in the Iowa caucuses. But were they Dems? Were they Republicans before? Well, we don't know. But there were an awful lot of new people that joined just to be able to vote in those caucuses, and they are referred to as independents. In other words, we don't know what their background or purpose was, but just had to show up at the right place if you could find that was where that was in Iowa and sign up and cast your ballot. So that's the story about Giuliani and others. In terms of nice people who would you say, Republicans and Democrats, let's not talk about politics or these other issues, in terms of a nice person that you'd like to meet and be friends with, Susan, maybe you hadn't considered this before. If you haven't, think about it. I can tell mine. But who do you think are the nicest people just to meet, to be friends with, out of the Republican and Democratic candidates that are out there so far?
Well, I like Kucinich. I wouldn't mind meeting him. He's obviously a very intelligent person. He has a very well thought out philosophy. I wouldn't mind meeting Hillary.
Mm-hmm. As a friend, do you think she'd be very demanding?
As a friend, I don't know that she has really a lot of time to
be friends. No, she doesn't have time to be your friend. Okay.
They have friends that they send a Christmas card to.
Okay,
but
those are yours. First of all, I'd love to be friends with Kucinich and Fred Thompson to meet their wives. Okay, that's my sexist stuff. I got that out of the way. Gloria Steinem, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. But it was just a joke. You know, I got to ad lib these. I don't pay writers for that. Okay. Dennis Kucinich seems like a really nice person. I happen to agree with him on a lot of issues politically. I mean, and his goals. But as a nice, friendly person, sure. Bill Richardson himself.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he would be real nice too.
You know, I would have loved to have been friends with, if I ever could have met him, Ronald Reagan. I mean, think back. I mean, what a nice guy. I'd love to have him as a friend, as a guy living next door. I would go out and clear brush with him, you know, on his property and split logs. And what a nice human being. As president, I think he was a disaster. He didn't even do what he said he was going to do. I totally agreed with a lot of his speeches he gave in running for that nomination. I didn't vote for him, I don't think, but the point was, nice guy, love to meet him. Not many people like this in running for Congress. Giuliani, as I said when I saw him in person in October here in Dearborn, very scary. I wouldn't want that guy as a friend of mine. I'm afraid of him for some reason. He's always so assertive and aggressive, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. John Edwards, yeah. I'd love to meet John Edwards. Hillary, I don't think I have a problem with her, although I know that she's a strong, powerful woman. I wouldn't feel like a wimp or a child with her. I think she could respect me and vice versa. I think she's, after what she's put up with Bill Clinton, she can adapt to anything, you know.
Right.
She can be nice to anybody, you know, and I don't think it's an act. I think she really is a totally together and intelligent woman. And I don't have any sexist comment about her either to make at all, but as a nice person there. And I'm sure everyone is a nice person, you know, deep down inside. But I'm just saying is that not too many of these candidates. Oh, I'm sorry, the big name here. I saw him in person, and I talked to his supporter, Mike Huckabee.
Oh, yeah, Mike Huckabee.
Friendly, real human person.
Yeah,
not just because he's willing to play in a rock band. Except with Mike, I don't know what he'd be like out of the limelight. I think he knows how to be very nice, and it's probably not an act in person. But what about in the darkest moment late at night, you know, in private? I don't know if he's... Can anybody be that nice and that human all the way through? Well, he is a minister, or was. Maybe he is. I think his image or his projection of how nice and friendly he is as a normal human being is a wonderful job. I mean, politically speaking, it's wonderful for his campaign. What a nice, nice guy. It's just that some people are a little suspicious. Can he really be that nice all the way through? I think we always knew that about Bill Richardson. For some reason.
No, I didn't know that about Bill Richardson, but I'm impressed.
All the way through, not just what he said about the other candidates, but all the way through, always in his political life, what a nice, wonderful, warm human being, always trying to be nice to everybody. And, of course, he's got ideas, and you may disagree with his ideas or his what he's done legislatively or whatever. I think New Mexico loves him and will probably reelect him as governor again if he runs. But Huckabee is has amazing projection of sort of Ronald Reagan, nice, common person, but smart.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry to say George W. Bush does not project the smart part about being a nice person. A lot of people think he's a nice, ordinary guy. Well, I'd also like a smart, nice, ordinary guy to be president of the United States. And I'm sorry to say I never felt that about George Bush.
Well, you know, in this election, Jay, one of the things they say is that the voters are looking for someone who gives them inspiration. And I think Huckabee and Obama have been the two that are capturing the inspiration of the voters.
Sorry. I'm sorry I didn't mention Barack. I didn't mean to slight him. But, you know, I don't feel I know him well enough. He's very articulate, but he's very careful in everything he says, which is good. You always have to be careful. I just don't know if I like him as a person.
I don't get a lot of warmth from him.
Well, I think he's a very nice person. I just don't get that full, complete sort of nicety that I was talking about in terms of, well, Ronald Reagan and Huckabee, almost 90% of Huckabee, nice and friendly, and Bill Richardson. Again, John Edwards, I know he's a driven, compelling speaker now, and he's got a purpose and a cause, and it makes him a little hot or pushy sounding, but everything I've read about him and his campaign, I think he's a very nice and very dedicated person. Kucinich, I'm sure, too, and I think Hillary. Barack, I just don't feel I know him enough to say he's a nice person that I would like to be friends with. But that's just a very personal, okay, we did the subjective thing, folks. We're not telling you who to vote for, you know, but we're trying to fill in stuff that I don't even think the national pundits would talk about here, and that is the nice factor, a nice human being factor, and it's all subjective.
Well,
very
I think
subjective,
that Huckabee is making a lot of points with that persona. Yeah.
We'll see if how it works in Michigan, because I think that's a wide open and somewhat fair half of the presidential primary to see what the Republican voters or those that choose to vote Republican will do on Tuesday here in Michigan. So please do vote. We're going to finish up the new WHFR Journal now with that final thought. It is about 2 minutes to the hour, and that's all the time we have for today. Please go and do your civic duty if you are registered to vote in Michigan, and decide, even if you're independent, what is the best way to go for you, the Democratic side or the Republican side? If it's Democratic, do you want to vote for Hillary or maybe Kucinich if his name is there, or vote uncommitted? Republican side, you've got the usual suspects to consider. Thank you, Susan Morrell. Stay tuned
for the
Highway 61 show with Joanne Korchinska coming right up here. This is WHFR Dearborn. Until then, let's keep stirring things up.
Me and you.